we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jubb.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz.
We start with a cutting from the Wrexham Daily Post, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Fire crews have rescued a couple's wedding day. St John the Baptist Church in Penymunnith was found smoke-filled after an organ overheated this morning.
Our thanks to Val Cooper, Jane Williams and all the other mucky-minded souls who sent us that bit of local warmth. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkind and Kerry Godleyman. And opposite them, on my left, Bridget Christie and Andrew Maxwell. So, Hugo, whose speech covered a broad band of proposals?
So this would be the Queen's speech. Which happened this week. And it really got me thinking, the Queen's speech. Because at the moment, there are lots of people kind of arguing that all our weird laws come from Brussels. And if we leave the EU, we won't have any weird laws. And they're arguing this at a time when the government's entire sort of proposal for the next year of government is being read out by a 90-year-old woman in fancy dress wearing a giant tiara, who by law is the only person allowed to eat a swan. And so you wonder if that necessarily makes sense. But look, there she was, reading out the government's demands, sitting in her throne, looking, as one Guardian columnist put it, like the poshest hostage ever. And they were all there, they were all dressed up, having a wonderful time, you know, page boys and horn blowers and beef eaters and Michael Gove was looking very pleased. He wears this costume with a ruff because he's Lord Chancellor, and he's sort of like a cross between Austin Powers and the Child Catcher. So Black Rod comes and bangs on the door, and Dennis Skinner does his traditional heckle, been doing it since 1642, I think. And all the MPs, they walk in pairs to the House of Lords, where they're normally like not allowed to go, because MPs don't go in the House of Lords. And I always think it must be really weird for them. It's like a glimpse of their own future, you know. It's like kids going to an old people's home, thinking, like, one day that'll be you. They go in pairs. They pair up to walk through. Cameron went with Corbyn, and Cameron kept trying to make conversation, and Corbyn was just having none of it, just kind of going, yeah. Because he must hate it, Corbyn, because, you know, his whole worldview is he's everything he doesn't want Britain to be. He wants Britain to be sort of black and white and like the 1970s and made of breeze blocks and miserable and socialist. Whereas Cameron looks around the House of Lords and he feels quite at home because it reminds him of his school. So then she got up there and she announced various policies. Broadband is now a right. Something's happening with prisons. I think they said they were going to build a spaceport.
And is a spaceport, that's not where spaceships take off from it. They just dock there.
It's just in case any turn up and want to land.
I find watching the Queen's speech, the sort of long build-up to it, is completely baffling, I suppose.
She got a lift this time. She took a lift.
Uber?
No.
I couldn't believe that she was prepared to share with someone, but it is cheaper, of course.
That'd be great. She'd go Uber Lux.
Yeah.
Is it like the top rank of Uber where you get the golden carriage pulled by horses?
Yeah, that's what she came in. No, I saw that she got a lift, and I just assumed they meant a standard chair lift. I thought, it was the first time ever, but I thought, cut her some slack, she's 90. Mm-hmm. Let the woman get a lift.
But
and
also,
they were like, she's not really up to it.
Do you think that was the message?
I think that was what they were.
Do you not think it's a position of strength being in a golden carriage? It's basically a cry for help.
It may well be.
I mean, you know, I grew up in a republic, so we get none of that.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice to once a year turn on the TV and see a rise. Britain is entirely run by pimps. So 500 pimps. Who wouldn't want to wear ermine once in a while? So soft. Where do you get it?
Hugo, where does one get one's ermine?
I do have a friend who is a peer of the realm.
Yeah.
And he was telling me he had to borrow some robes to go for the opening of Parliament last year. And when he sent them back to whoever he borrowed them from, he took them to the post office. And they said, what's in there? And he showed them, he goes, it's some robes. And they wrote, Santa costume.
Once they'd finally described the agonising act of her actually getting there and starting to speak, then what did she actually talk about, Her Majesty?
Fizzy drinks.
That's the possibility of the sugar tax.
Yeah, the sugar tax was in there.
Several times before that was up there.
There's a lot of prisons. Prison, they're going to make prison nice.
She seems absolutely obsessed with prisons. Couldn't stop talking about them. I don't know. I presume you get an idea of what she watches on Netflix. she is well into prisons.
I think the big idea is to flog the prisons off because they're in lovely parts of real estate. I mean, I don't know how they're living inside. but they're incredibly well located. And then they're going to move the scallywags out to where Londoners don't want to live, like Norfolk. I recorded a live album in my hometown prison. It's called Mountjoy Prison in Dublin, and it's another kind of Victorian slop-out nick. And
was this an album of songs, or what
it was just me doing stand-up and fending off advances?
Were you... Johnny Cash, a stand-up Johnny Cash.
I thought I was going to be like Johnny. I thought it was going to be like ding, 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 ding. Oh no! It turns out murderers are quite nasty hecklers. Dude. Before it went on, literally, there's me and 400 murderers and me dad at the back, because he's game. It's me and 400 murderers. And just before I walked on, the daddy at a wing came up to me and just looked me up and down and went, "You're a lovely size for a hostage." All I could think to do was curtsy.
Yeah. Do you think that is what Cameron was whispering to Corbyn?
But this is something...
You're a rather nice size for a hostage. We could put you in a barrel and roll you down the house step. Perniciously, this is the Queen's speech, where Her Majesty outlined the government's forthcoming legislative programme and was able to speak into a camera without at any point gratuitously bad-mouthing the Chinese. In sweeping reforms to the prison system, weekend inmates will be introduced, some prisons will be allowed to operate semi-autonomously, and Justice Secretary Michael Gove will be issued with a sock full of snooker balls and the ceremonial title of the Daddy. The Queen promised a digital revolution fuelled by internet connectivity by rolling 10 megabit broadband out across the country, allowing Brian from the policy office to once again win the prize for getting the Queen to say the most words that she clearly didn't understand. Tim Farron pointed out that of the 30 announcements, 28 had been made before, leading to cries of shame from his fellow Lib Dems and cries of, "Please tell us who you are," from literally everyone else. 2 points to Hugo. Kerry, which doctors are back in the house?
Well, this is to do with the junior doctors' strike. There has been some movement, lots of discussion. Jeremy Hunt is feeling optimistic that he might have resolved it, but the BMA still need to read it over and take it back to the doctors and make a decision about it. So it's in reference to that. Jeremy Hunt is very determined to stand firm that he's going to reform the NHS and make it a 7-day-a-week service and things of that nature. Doctors should be able to Skype or email or emoji their diagnoses. To people. You could just send a little aubergine if you're not feeling very good, or that little poo with eyes, that would be quite... so that's one way of doing it. Most people are getting quite used to having to self-diagnose now. Anyway, I do a lot of self-diagnosis on the internet. I am a GP, a Google practitioner. It's quite risky business, especially if you're a little bit of a hypochondriac, because it's sort of, you just tap in your symptoms and then a sort of carousel of doom kind of opens up to you. It's like a generation game for hypochondriacs with flu, tonsillitis, cuddly toy, teas made, Ebola, meningitis.
Why have they been able to come to an agreement now?
They haven't yet, have they? It's not been agreed.
Well, it's been agreed with the BMA, but the junior doctors have to vote on it as well.
I mean, Jeremy Hunt was on the TV just before this agreement, and he was going, it's really important that this dispute ends. And I was thinking, why is he saying that? He's got a rash. He's got a rash and he's been putting it off for months now. And it's just too late, and he's got to go to the doctor. He's Googled it.
Yeah.
He thinks, if this strike goes on, my rash is going to cause real trouble.
Especially if it flares up on a Sunday.
These junior doctors are grown-ups. They're not junior at all. I thought they'd be like doctor versions of the Muppet Babies. little junior doctor.
How long into the dispute did you realise that we were talking about adults and not... not children?
What I'm saying is, they're not like student doctors.
Did you used to think that Animal Hospital was a programme about animals who worked as doctors and nurses?
Ridiculous. Everybody knows a cloven hoof can't hold a scalpel. Jeez.
Does anyone think this could be over?
Well, I mean, the doctors need to decide whether they agree with the deal. I mean, the junior doctors themselves are in a slightly weird position because they were supported by the BMA in their strike, and now the BMA is backing this deal, but the junior doctors aren't yet.
We don't need you, doctors. We can always fall back on the homeopaths. Yeah. Right? So smug, doctors. What do you think? They're holding us to ransom, like as if colour therapists don't exist. Right? there's science in that. Do you think we don't have dream catchers?
There's all these superbugs. These have been in the news this week as well. So we're going to need dream catchers and aromatherapy because antibiotics are not working.
That's right, yeah. David Cameron has commissioned a report. Do you know what it said? Yeah. The findings?
It said that antibiotics can't combat bacteria anymore because we're all taking too many antibiotics. I take them if I have a hangover.
By 2050...
Someone's going to die every 3 seconds. That's
by 2050?
By 2050.
Every 3 seconds, yes, somebody will die.
Someone will die.
What a nightmare.
We do have an ageing population.
All this living.
We do have... there are as many 90-year-olds as 5-year-olds now, I think.
Aren't there? Yeah, well, if you go to a playground, I mean, you can hardly get your children on the swings, can you? Those people that let their grandparents walk up a slide when there are children waiting to go down, they are absolutely the scum of the earth, aren't they?
Honestly, stop living. The retirement was built... You were meant to have 1 year of retirement after 50 years down the pit. You were meant to wheeze away, say goodbye to the family and do the decent thing and die at 40.
We've lost so much.
Now they're on and on with their watercolours and their memory clubs. Oh. Life begins at 60. It shouldn't.
Avuncularly, this is the news that after 8 days of strikes and 10 months of talk, a junior doctor pay deal has possibly, finally, been reached. Jeremy Hunt said that the deal would finally usher in a 7-day NHS, giving sick patients 2 extra days in which their doctor is too busy to see them. In other medical news, a report commissioned by David Cameron suggests that antibiotic resistance could lead to the loss of 10 million lives a year by 2050. With recent warnings of spiralling global temperatures, tensions between nuclear superpowers, artificial intelligence and now antibiotic resistance, the upcoming apocalypse has very much taken on the feel of a lucky dip. Economist Lord O'Neill says we must stop treating antibiotics like sweets, although since I started rewarding my children with the occasional blister pack of amoxicillin, I have to say their teeth have never been cleaner. 2 points to Kerry. Hugo, who has got a lecture about their standards?
Universities. The government has decided that universities are going to be ranked like schools are ranked. There's going to be a sort of Ofsted, but for universities. And universities that underperform, that don't do well, they're going to reduce the amount of fees they can charge. So as a sort of incentive to universities to do better, as in if they do worse, they won't be able to charge as much in fees, which is kind of counterintuitive, because it means if you're a struggling university, you're going to lose money, and you think you need more money to be better. Because with schools, if you've got a struggling school, they give them more money, but they're going to sort of starve the struggling universities of money. They'll be able to charge students less. It'll be cheaper to go there, but you won't want to go there because it'll be rubbish. It's a very confusing story, but I don't really understand what university's for anymore anyway. Because in my day, it was all about drinking wine in mugs and having stupid hair and failing to find anybody to have sex with you. Whereas these days, they don't even watch daytime TV anymore if you're a student, because they've got Netflix. And, I mean, it's a weird world. I went back to my old college a few years ago, and I saw where my old room was, which was the room that everyone wanted because it was just above the bar. And now nobody wants to live there because it's just above the bar. I don't know what's going on. Students these days, they pay their fees so it matters, so they work and they have standards and they want to achieve in life and they're not alcoholics. And if they didn't have all that crippling debt, I might feel rather threatened.
What was George Osborne discovered to have written in 2003?
He was really anti-student fees, wasn't he, back then? He said he was totally opposed to student fees.
He criticised the introduction of university tuition fees. He said they were very unfair and they were a tax on learning. But yes, he's slightly changed his view now. What about the University of East Anglia? Why have they been in the news?
They've banned mortarboards.
They have. Why? Well, why?
Because they could get in your eye if they fall in your face on graduation day, people chucking them in the air, and they could get harmed.
Somebody did get harmed last year, and that's why they've stopped it. What? One day we're going to live without harm. I can't wait
for that. It's health and safety gone mad, isn't it? Well, but there's a photography company that said that they can superimpose the mortarboard into your graduation...
That's right, yeah.
..into your graduation photograph.
They could have them on wires, couldn't they? Just
Oh, that's a good idea. You just can everyone go and stand underneath the floating sort of mortarboard.
Oh, I love that. Or little daily boppers with mortarboards on. Yeah.
We need to be a bit more stringent with evolution. If you can't survive a mortarboard attack... You know, all this
if bacteria
years of fancy...
can survive antibiotics, I think we can cope with mortarboards.
It's actually, to be fair, they haven't banned them. They've suggested that in group photos that, you know, you might not throw them.
Oh, that's not as good as Scoop, though, is it? It's better if you ban them, because it's funny.
It's not even lamer. We're just suggesting it. Oh, God.
No, you're not allowed.
The minute we ban bear baiting, it's all gone downhill.
Couldn't you just take the corners off? If the corners are the problem...
Yeah, they should just redesign mortarboards. Yeah. They should have a sort of...
Oh, is that what you want?
They should just have a sort of circular.
You want all the students to throw a fez in the air, do you? Is that what you want, Sadiq Khan? What next? You're not taking my foreskin.
It's nice to hear some common sense at last.
Toddler things you get for cupboards, you could put those on the corners.
Toddler things?
You know, to stop
to
toddlers knocking into things.
This is where we keep our cupboard toddlers, so you open the door.
You know those things you put on drawers and corners?
Appalling.
Handles?
Appalling.
No! Those
locks?
They're like little bits of foam to stop a toddler knocking themselves out.
Yeah, okay,
appalling.
Yeah.
That's how a toddler learns. Ouch! Learn. Yeah. If it's constantly boing, 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 one day I'll be the leader of the Tory party. I can say I do anything. Children need to hurt themselves and that's how they learn.
But you're not suggesting, seriously, that we all start throwing mortarboards at children, actually. As a way of preparing them for their graduation in 21 years' time.
Theatrically, this is the new white paper on universities, allowing those whose teaching is rated as excellent to charge higher fees. Universities will be ranked for the first time under an Ofsted-style system, Ofsted-style being government shorthand for utterly shambolic. It'll be easier now for dissatisfied undergraduates to switch universities, though I must point out that there is nothing to do in Aberystwyth apart from hate myself and scream at the sea is not a valid reason for switching. Also this week, it emerged that George Osborne wrote in a letter he sent in 2003 that tuition fees were a tax on learning and that a Conservative government would abolish them. The 12-year-old French schoolboy who received the letter was bemused by this response from his new pen pal, especially since all he'd asked was, "Do you like Steven Seagal?" And the University of East Anglia has banned the throwing of mortarboards in graduation photos on the grounds of health and safety. A local firm said that for a small fee, mortarboards can be digitally added to your graduation photographs, as can dinosaurs. 2 points to Hugo. And at the end of round one, the scores are Bridget and Andrew have 4, but Hugo and Kerry have 5. We start round two with a cutting from the Construction Enquirer.
A specialist firm which empties site toilets has been hit with fines of £40,000 for illegal dumping.
Thanks to Ross Jackson, Chris Owen Hughes and George Owen for sending us that rubbish. Kerry, have a listen to this. Well, who could fail to be deeply and profoundly moved by that? Kerry, whose package went down like a bomb?
This is to do with the cancelled football match between Bournemouth and Manchester United. There was an evacuation at Old Trafford because they found a bomb that actually turned out to be a fake that was being used for a training thing and the security company had left it in the toilet. And the police said it looked like a real bomb, which I imagine it was a sort of black spherical thing with a lit fuse. And it said TNT on the side. But it turned out, actually, a real bomb looks like a mobile phone gaffer taped to a pipe. And on the side of it, it said, "This is a fake bomb. If found, please call Steve on 07974. It had his number on there, and yet they still... thought it was a fake bomb. The bloke was very embarrassed. I felt sorry for him. We've all made mistakes at work, haven't we? It happened. I remember when I used to work in a hairdressing salon, I took the rods out of Mrs. Blakely's perm before I'd put the neutraliser on. It was devastating. But he said...
I think we all know what the consequences of that would be.
Well, it didn't take miles. It meant that she didn't have curly hair. When they did the rematch, on Tuesday, I think, and all the Bournemouth supporters were shouting, "Do you want us to check the bogs for you?"
If I saw something that looked like something but said on it that it was a fake thing, that would make me even more suspicious of what? Like a double blast.
Would you think it was sort of ISIL using reverse psychology?
Well, I don't know. Well, OK, so I was in the
park.
These
are the landmines you can tread on.
Yeah.
I ought to
these will light up and make a tune. So I was in the park at the weekend with my children, and there was a guy just sat, he was a really dodgy-looking bloke, sat on the bench.
Your husband?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, if he had a T-shirt saying, I am definitely not a paedophile, that would not make me feel reassured.
If I saw something that looked like suspect device, I would, you know, you see something, say something. I would get straight onto the police and speak in a different accent. Hello. Hello, yes, my name's Miles.
This is like a bomb training exercise, yeah?
Yeah.
Firstly, I'm thinking that training exercise hasn't gone too well if they lost one of the bombs. Yeah?
Yeah, but there was, like, 16 bombs, so to only lose one bomb... But,
OK,
16.
Secondly, I can understand...
If you go to the beach and you come back with, like, missing one flip-flop or something, you think, that wasn't bad, actually. There's a bit more sand in the boot than I would like, but we've only lost one flip-flop. That's not a bad...
OK, so you finish your bomb training exercise, you failed to find one of the bombs. What are we going to do? I know what you do. It's got a bloody phone sellotape to it. Phone the thing.
Toilet going to the loo.
Yeah, I'm on a bomb.
Yeah, like if a bomb rang in the other cubicle, you'd be like, hello? You'd leave it.
I've got your phone.
Phantasmagorically, this is the suspect device found at the Old Trafford football ground prior to a match between Manchester United and Bournemouth. The device was initially thought to be a terrorist bomb, which makes sense given that terror groups have a long record of sympathy with Bournemouth's painful and bloody struggle for independence from Dorset. The device was found hanging on the back of a toilet door, thus being in the curious position of both leading to an evacuation and being spotted during one. The device had been left behind by a private security company following an exercise where they simulated the controlled destruction of the reputation of a private security company. 2 points to Kerry. Andrew, who digs graves too much?
So this is goths. You know, middle-class disappointments.
I was a goth.
Now look at you. You've moved on. You're not still... swaying around, listen to Bauhaus.
How do you know?
It's basically, there is the great town of Whitby, which hosts one of the world's largest gathering of goths, the Goth Weekend. And they come from all over the world and mope around. But there's so many of them, such as the popularity of the moping. The popularity in Whitby of this giant goth do, and all the goths hang around in the graveyard up on the hill looking over the sea, means that the council want to build a fake graveyard for them to hang around in. There's a reason why all the Goths gathered there, because Dracula showed up there. He was Romanian, he didn't go through proper channels. he got the soft underbelly of the British border, which is Whitby. You know, I don't dress like a Goth, but I'm into it, you know, sometimes. Full moon. I've got a 17th century Witchfinder General's cloak. It's pretty sick.
Have you got any of the old kit, Bridget, still?
The old kit?
I mean, yeah.
Well, it's not like a kit. It's just clothes. What, God, don't you know anything, you posh people? What?
I'll be honest with you, I've never known a goth that isn't posh. There's no working class goths.
They're real.
No, we weeded them out a long time ago.
You do have a point, right? Because when I was 12, 13, we were goths in the 80s. mid-80s in Gloucester.
You and your friends? You and your family?
Yeah, me and my friends. 11 goths, all different ages. Yeah. No, that would look so strange. And so we would go to the church graveyard and buy bottles of cider and sit there and be weird and ghosty. But now I go to that same graveyard with my children and they eat olives there, so you do...
Why do you take your kids to a graveyard to eat olives?
It's a nice place to sit.
Take them to the park, Bridget.
No, the graveyard's much better.
What a picture we are slowly building. Musterly, this is the news that an artificial graveyard is planned in Whitby to cater for goths wanting to be photographed amongst local tombstones. The graveyard will cater for the goths while presumably also dealing with Whitby's ongoing corpse problem. Of course, if vampires were real, they wouldn't show up on camera, so every selfie would really be a reminder of their own failure. Still, it's boom time for Whitby retailers who have managed to get the slogan, I wear black on the outside because black is how I feel on the inside, running right through a stick of rock. 2 points to Andrew. Before we reveal final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Hugo.
Yeah, this was sent in by Eddie Wright, and it's a correction from the New York Times. And it reads, an article on Monday about a theological battle fought by Muslim imams and scholars in the West against the Islamic State misstated the Snapchat handle used by Suhaib Webb, one of the Muslim leaders speaking out. It is, one word, Imam Suhaib Webb, not, one word, Pimpin' for Paradise 786.
Kerry.
Andy Mitchell in South Ronaldsay received this letter from his MSP on polling day last week. Dear Andy, I have spent the day visiting polling stations and knocking up voters right across Orkney.
Bridget.
Clive Layton in Coventry noticed this synopsis for The Line of Duty, which was on BBC Two. A brutal ambush on a police convoy leaves three officers dead and a protected witness fighting for his life. Contains some violence.
Andrew.
This is sent in by Paul Falville of New Malden, Surrey. A car was swallowed up by a sinkhole in a residential home in Greenwich, East London, yesterday. The area is home to several sinkholes, which mining experts blame on disused mines. Estate agents fear house prices may go through the floor.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final scores. Bridget and Andrew have 8, but this week's winners are Hugo and Kerry with 9. Before we leave you, here is a letter taken from the Essex Chronicle, sent in by Sally Brown of Chelmsford.
Dear sir, please could you convey my thanks to the three members of the public who came to my wife's aid when she fell heavily on April the 9th. My thanks also go to the ambulance crew who tended to her and calmed her, checked her over, and allowed me to complete my business in Argos.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkin, Kerry Godleman, Bridget Christie and Andrew Maxwell. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Lucy Clark, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and James Kettle, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Carl Jones. The producer was Paul Sheehan and it was a BBC Studios production.